This is the tune, Simple Gifts. Okay. Do we all know that? That's familiar. Okay, thank you. I forgot to ask you to do that before. Bless his heart, that Rob Cook. I wanted to make sure you knew what that melody was before I began the talk, because this may be a little nonlinear. But we've gone there before, and that's nothing new, right? I was reading this book this week in anticipation of this talk. It's called The Creative Life by Eric Butterworth. It's not about making art. It's about successfully executing the greatest of all arts, which is your life. But I was thinking about, in my life, the role that art in its many forms has played. And this is going to take 4 minutes, but I want to show you a piece of video, if you would be willing. Tim, can you, first of all, just bring the screen down as we get ready for this? Because I have a setup for this. Maybe 1974, 5, 6, something around that time, I was in college. I lived in Washington, D.C. And, no, it was when I first started working at the National Endowment for the Arts, so that would be 76. And dance was bigger then than it is right now. And I found it very intriguing. It was something that I had never known about. I didn't know the history of modern dance in this country, and it was all brand new to me. But one night I went to a performance of Martha Graham Dance Company. And do most of you know that name, Martha Graham? Yes. Who was a choreographer and is acknowledged to be one of the great artists of the 20th century. And I saw a piece which is called Appalachian Spring. The music is by Aaron Copland. It was commissioned as a ballet, as a short ballet, by Martha Graham Dance Company in 1944. So this would be during the war. And it was first performed at the Library of Congress. They have a theater there. Towards the end of this particular dance, the theme of simple gifts is incorporated in the ballet. And that's really why we as Americans know it, is because Aaron Copland popularized this obscure shaker tune in his ballet music for Appalachian Spring. And then it got popular, increasingly popular after that. And so this is the end. This is the last 3 minutes of this modern dance ballet. And it may seem silly to you if you don't know modern dance, but I really wanted to show it, and you will hear this Simple Gifts theme in it. So, Tim, can you give us optimum viewing conditions? And, again, we're going to listen to the last 3 minutes of this ballet and play it from... Applause. That was filmed in 1958. She was 64 at the time. And I don't expect this to be anybody else's experience but my own, but I want to share it. When I saw that, I was absolutely stunned. And it was the first time in my life, because I had not entered into study of metaphysics or anything of that nature. I didn't go to church at all. But I knew that there was a power that was greater than anything that I understood. Because I experienced a direct communication of soul. I'm not a dancer, never had any ambition to be one, but all I wanted to do was to dance. All the way home, there was something in me that was so alive in a way it had never been. And at the same time, I was absolutely stunned. I was immobile. I couldn't move. What I understand now is that there was a powerful communication that happened, and I was receptive to it for whatever reason. But I understand that that experience, whatever that is, whatever they're doing, awakened that same thing in me. And I had an experience of unity, a unitive experience. There was no difference between the dancer and the dance and myself. And I didn't have language for it for decades. Not for decades. It still gives me chills when I see that, because I remember that moment when I knew that there was some power to communicate that was transcendent. And now I call that God. We call that God. For some of us, we can experience it something like that. Some of us experience it when we garden. Henry David Thoreau said that every farmer is a mystic. That's not true now. But in a pre-industrial revolutionary America, when people really worked the land with their hands, they knew that there were powers that they were working with that were not merely of the seed or the soil or the sun or themselves, but there was an extra element that was at work. And some of you may experience this in whatever it is that you love, whatever you're passionate about, or whoever you love, whomever you love. But there is a huge power for awakening and transformation that exists in every expression that is life. And if we would be available to it, we will find ourselves continually in a creative process that is the unfolding of your own life, and therefore in a mode, in a life way that is transformative in itself. I often say that we're here for one reason, and that's to assist you in the transformation of your life. And that may seem like a very theoretical offering that we're giving, but it's very practical and very specific. So that today, tomorrow, and all the tomorrows, however many that you might have, you might be actually different than you are right now. And the difference being, you might have a fuller realization of your wholeness and the immensity of the world in which we live, and the opportunities that are available for you. This is the purpose. Now, when we talk about creativity, I get it most easily through expressions like that and the visual arts. Some of us do in the written arts for sure. And musically, we are, well, all of us respond to that, it seems. No one is immune to the transference and the awakening power that music has. The reason to place ourselves in proximity to that, though, is so we might be intrigued by the process, the creative process itself, be more familiar with it, and become more skillful in its use. Now, this book that Eric Butterworth writes, and you know that I'm highly biased towards Eric Butterworth, and I think everything he writes is great, and it is time well spent reading this book. But there was actually one paragraph that made me laugh. You'll see this is where I get a lot of my language when I read things from Eric Butterworth. But he says, "Worry is one of the most effective illustrations of the warping of prayer. You might say, I didn't sleep a wink last night. I prayed all night about this problem. But the fact is, you didn't pray at all. You began with, Dear Lord, and you closed with, Amen. And in between, you had an orgy of self-pity and paranoia." But true prayer is letting go of the problem and being receptive to the transcendent solution that already exists within you. If you can catch this point, you will save yourself from many sleepless nights. I want to read that sentence again. But true prayer is letting go of the problem and being receptive to the transcendent solution that already exists within you. I did not know that I had a receptivity to dance, but I was receptive to it, and I found my experience of my own life larger, forever, from that day forward. All of us, or put it this way, therefore, the art of life is placing ourselves in situations, consciously placing ourselves in situations and environments that we may not be familiar with, but somehow spark some kind of intrigue in our mind, and being receptive to whatever excellence is being transferred or transmitted. A quality, a state of non-resistance is the most healing mental environment that we can cultivate. Because unless we're non-resistant, we are not receptive to whatever transcendent, healing, life-enhancing energies might be coming at us. And they're coming at us all the time, but we have so many judgments, especially about what we think is creative or too artsy-fartsy or too whatever, or this computer program is too complicated for me because I'm too old to learn anything new. Stop it. If we can make ourselves non-resistant, which means to let go of all the judgments about everything that is wrong with what everybody else is doing, we will be astonished to find, A, our pleasure increases, B, we're so much more fun to be around, and C, the world becomes exciting all over again. And this is what the creative process is about, is being non-resistant or as non-judgmental as you can be and being intrigued. Being intrigued with whatever environment you find yourself in. Of not being so quick to shut things down, but to say, tell me more. That seems to be a very difficult question for most of us to ask. Tell me more. What are you doing? How did you learn that? You know, I think we think that if we pretend we know all the answers, then we will seem smart. And the smartest people I know, the broadest gauge people I know, and the most successful people I know are always saying, explain that to me. Tell me what that word means. I don't understand that. Or I never saw this before. Tell me what I should appreciate about this. These are the people that have lives that are long, unusually healthy, and unusually productive. Martha Graham was dancing. Well, she danced a little bit past her prime, but don't we all? But she was still dancing in performance when she was 79. And there are plenty of people that are hard at work. You listen to NPR? Anybody? Daniel Shore is 94. He's 94. Yeah. And he's their senior correspondent. By a long shot, he's their senior correspondent. But he's 94. Pablo Casals was concertizing well into his 90s, and Picasso was painting well into his 90s. Not that there's anything extra holy or special about living long, and there's no shame in dying young. But to place oneself, to see life primarily as a creative opportunity, which means not being afraid to take on new stuff, being curious, if that works better for you than non-resistant or non-judgmental, but being deeply curious, and I know all of you are, that's why you're here, right? If you weren't essentially curious people, you would still be going, Lord, I am not worthy. But we're beyond that. To say, I must be worthy. I'm here. Tell me more. And tell me how to be more and to do more and to get more. It's a gift to be simple. Have you heard? And that condition of simplicity, for me, is a willingness to enter into whatever the day brings and to see it essentially as an act of creation. Every small business person is an artist. They are creating every single day. We get to create every single week something new and wonderful. Making money is creative. Spending money is creative. Giving money is creative. Everything, if you bring your non-resistance and your whole self to it, is a creative act, which then will be transformative. It has to be in your life. When you bring your whole self to any task, to cooking, you bring your whole self to it, you will be transformed. You will have a larger sense of your own integrity. Body, mind, spirit, subtle bodies, whatever they are, when we can experience them as one, we become more powerful and health-filled. This is the point of getting up every day. Creativity is something that we have become so dismissive of. And it is the single most important quality that we can embrace in living these grace-filled, effective lives. Let's conclude with a creative prayer. Shall we do that? Which is what we do every single time we open our mouths, yes? We don't say the same old thing and go on automatic pilot. Prayer, the affirmative prayer that we work with, is simple. Every time I have an opportunity to pray, I close my eyes so I won't be distracted. And I remember very simple truths like this one, there is one mind. Like this one, there is one cosmos. That is what creation is. And it is God in expression. It is the life principle outpicturing. The cosmos holds together and keeps sustaining life. And I'm part of that. A perfect expression of a pattern of creativity that knows no beginning and no end. And so whatever powers of creation are available from the mind of God into the whole cosmos, if I accept at long last that I am at one with it, I find myself receptive to the power, the beauty, and the creativity that it is transmitting everywhere all at once. There is a power for good in the universe, and you can use it. If it has been asleep, allow this great song, Simple Gifts, to awaken it in you. You are the power and the presence and the glory. So it is. Amen.